Totally Hockey at the IIHF 2019 Ice Hockey World Championship, Day 14, the quarterfinals. Yeah, hello everybody and welcome back to our coverage of the Ice Hockey World Championship. Particularly exciting day today, particularly exciting pair of guests in for us as well. Alex Appleyard, hockey writer, The Athletic and other good places to read hockey writing. And similarly, joining us today, Julie Robbenheimer. Julie, so glad you could be here in person at last.
I'm excited to be here in person. Quite a setup here.
It's an extraordinary setup. It's kind of spongy.
That's a good word for it.
Should we just leave it and then people can kind of fill in the rest with their imaginations. But what a quartet of matches we've had. Two overtime games and all three of last year's medalists are out of the competition, Alex, including the team that's won it the last 2 years.
I think it was a big shock for Sweden to go out, especially against a Finland team that on paper are extremely depleted. They only really have two NHLers and neither of them are full-time. I mean, Kaapo Kakko obviously is a fantastic talent, but it was a big shock, especially with the fantastic Sweden defense they brought to the tournament. William Nylander, he had a fantastic game today, but it just wasn't enough.
Remarkable day then. Before we get into the games, let's just quickly round up the quarterfinal results. In Košice, irony is Canada beat the Swiss with the clock, tying it up with 0.4 of a second left, then taking the win in overtime. Also going to sudden death, Finland's Skando Settu with Sweden, the Finns roaring back from 3-1 down to take this 5-4. In Bratislava, Rossija won 4-3 and it's Rossija later to the much-vaunted US team, while the Czechs are into the semi-final and the Germans check out after Voracek and company had the biggest win of the day, 5-1 in Bratislava. So, the lineup for Saturday's semi-finals is Russia against Finland and Canada against the Czech Republic. Usual reminder that you can check out highlights and more on all the IIHF's social channels, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and YouTube, and also via the ever so useful IIHF app, which I use all the time. Julie, how about you?
It's obsessive. The only thing that I don't like about the IIHF app is that you can't go back in years to find out who did what last year.
Right.
So if the IIHF is listening to this podcast,
right,
I'd like to be able to go back in years.
Okay. Well, that's what we have you and Alex for. let's begin. So we got four games, four teams on the way home, and four teams now, just two games from a gold medal. We'll begin with Russia-USA. Russia, the tournament's most feared team. USA coming off a 3-0 defeat against Canada on Tuesday and getting off here to the worst start possible.
Shot from the line, save, rebound, score. Gusev bangs in a loose puck. And a 1-7 in, Russia has the 1-0 lead. Odd man rush, Gusev cross ice, score! And Sergachev takes it away, but then Jack Hughes steals. Hughes drops it, Hennepin scores! Rubbed out by Werenski, Malkin follows up, as Gregorenko scores! Dadanov takes the hit to make the play.
Here's Nikita Zadorov, and from Team USA, Jack Eichel.
Well, obviously it's a relief, you know. We made some trouble for ourselves at the end, you know. We could have made an easy place and didn't get in this situation. But, you know, finished well for us, so we're getting ready for next game. Like I said before, our goal is a gold medal, you know, and we don't need anything else. We're going to go up there and play hard as we could to make a final.
You guys had such expectations of you in this tournament. You must have had them as well. What can you say about it ending so suddenly?
Yeah, I mean, I thought obviously you want to win every time you come over and play in this tournament, and then when it doesn't happen, it's disappointing, so it's a tough loss.
They're an extraordinary team. Having played them, can you see anything that can be done to stop them?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything they got, we gave them for the most part, so...
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they had 2-2-on-1 goals there in the third period, and it's just coming off of our turnovers, they transitioned the puck well, and you just can't feed their transition.
We Well, there you have it. USA head home. Best US team ever, as it was billed, coming into this tournament, coming up short. And we'll talk maybe about why that is in a second or two. But Zadorov saying they're going for gold. And once again, it's hard to see what's going to stop them, Alex.
I mean, coming into the tournament, I think everyone kind of knew that that forward group especially had just such unbelievable talent throughout it. I mean, you've got Ilya Kovalchuk effectively playing a fourth line role, a man who's a Russian hockey legend and one day will probably go to the Hockey Hall of Fame as well. It's just an immense, a massive talent they have, and it's very difficult to stop them. I mean, today, against a good USA team, they put 43 shots on them. And when you're putting 43 shots on someone a game, it's very difficult to not allow 3, 4, 5 goals.
That Russia team had had an awesome second period against Sweden in their previous match. And when they started this one, I think about a minute and 7 seconds in or something, when Nikita Guzev opens the scoring, Julie, did you fear that it might turn out to be that kind of period for the Americans?
I didn't fear it only because I know how resilient the U.S. team is. And it almost in some ways would benefit them to have that kind of adversity because it forces them to dig deep right away instead of kind of easing into a game and seeing how things go. But at the same time, it's kind of the Russians' MO is to just attack, attack, attack. And, you know, like Jack Eichel said, they were given every opportunity and every mistake USA made, they made it count in either a scoring chance or in some cases a goal. The one thing that I will say for Team USA is it was their best game of the tournament in terms of complete play and allowing themselves to control the play. If you look at the game, it was all, you know, odd man rushes and offensive chances. They didn't really allow the Russians to get set up and have any kind of sustained offensive pressure, whereas the United States did have consistent offensive pressure. So it's shocking to see how outshot they were, but it's one of those things where for USA, they had to take more shots and they didn't take them.
The person next to me in the arena was shouting, shoot, shoot.
That would be me.
the whole time, because when Russia get there, they almost don't need to set up. You have a couple of players arriving and they just straight away.
They go right in and they shoot. And Team USA didn't do that. And some of that could just be from a lack of confidence. Some of it could be just deferring to other players, waiting for their teammates to come. Because that's what was happening. You know, Russia would enter the zone. Somebody would be carrying the puck in and they would throw it on net. They didn't care if somebody was there with them. They just trusted that a trailer would be there. And for Team USA, they didn't have that trust. They would enter the zone, full steam ahead, and then they'd pull up and wait for a teammate and then do a drop pass. And I don't understand how you can expect to score a goal when you're essentially shooting the puck the other way. So it was an oversight for Team USA. And I think if they had more time to look at this game and to come together as a team and have more meetings and have more practices, I think you might get a different result in this one.
Coming into this game, Alex, the Russian defense has been the big story. Their offensive talent, we will know about that, but the change this year has been the way they've been able to shut teams down. Should they be concerned about the amount of chances they conceded to the Americans?
I don't think it's an enormous concern. Firstly, America are probably the second best forward group in this tournament after Russia, with a lot of talent and a lot of real playmakers. I mean, you saw that today with the final goal they scored with Patrick Kane to the Brinkat. They've got Johnny Gaudreau. And secondly as well, the three goals that Russia did concede, the first one was a Sagachev point shot that unfortunately deflected off Jack Eichel's stick and made life. A deflection from that kind of distance is hell for a goalie. And the final two goals were moments of magic, actually, from a man who might go number one overall in the draft, Jack Hughes.
Right, which was interesting because his kind of absence from the headlines had been the headline for a lot of the week for Team USA. But this was the game, Julie, when he really made his mark.
I mean, it's not surprising. If you look at it, everybody wants to kind of compare Jack and Kako or Capo Kako. You get it confused all the time. But you can't do that. I mean, Capo's been playing against men for a year and a half. He has experience with knowing how hard it is to play against these guys and what it takes. Jack came here to learn how to do that and to get a head start on his NHL career, not only in terms of the locker room and being around NHL players and seeing the habits that they do and how they prepare and how they approach games, but also to see where he needed to work on things. And so if you look at the progression of the tournament for him, everything that he's done, he's gotten better and better and better. So I am not surprised that it kind of culminated in a game like this where he felt that he was comfortable in doing things. But then also he was a healthy scratch against Canada, which I know from a competitive standpoint, he was not happy about. I'm sure he understands why it happened and just, you know, which NHLer are you going to sit against Canada? But at the same time, he's got some personal pride and a little bit of an ego in that sense. And so I'm not surprised that we got his best game. He really dug deep. And even head coach Jeff Blashill said he showed everybody, including myself, what a gamer this kid is.
Big third period from him. He set up, I think it was the second U.S. goal.
And the third.
And the third.
Effectively, by keeping that play alive, robbing the puck from one of the Russians, then set up a goal that looked like it might keep America in the tie. You spoke to him afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did he say anything significant?
No, not really. He's not a big talker in general. But I will say this. It's one of those things where Jack takes a lot of pride in what he's able to do. And I know that he felt good about his tournament based on what he was able to do today against a ridiculously good Russian team. He was able to outskate, outperform, outpass pretty much everybody. There wasn't one situation where he looked like he didn't belong. And I feel that that is a big feather in his cap and answers a lot of questions about whether he's able to play in the NHL next year, if he can play against men, if he can hold his own, that sort of thing. And I feel that the only thing he's lacking is strength. And that's something that you can fix with 3 months in the gym.
Well, that's good news.
I think as well with Jack Hughes, the most impressive moment for me, obviously the first point he got, the stripping Sergachev of the puck, half spin move and passing it across was fantastic. But to show the kind of poise he showed on the USS third goal in the waning moments of the game with the game on the line, he got the puck in the slot. He's one of the smallest players in the tournament, very physically mature. There's lots of big Russian players around him. He didn't panic. He slowed the play down and got a brilliant pass across to Patrick Kane, who then found his Chicago Blackhawks teammates, Alex DeBrincat, on the back door for a beautiful goal.
From the Russian point of view, them being the winners and that, is there a player or two that you want to pick out in particular?
I mean, from this game, it was Nikita Gusev. This man's played in the KHL this year. He had 82 points in 62 games. That's the second highest amount of points in KHL history, only second to Sergei Mozyakin in a few years ago,
so
when he got
85. So they've got the KHL top scorer and the NHL top scorer in there.
Yes, they do. Mm. Next year, he's going to Las Vegas Golden Knights, and I think the Vegas fans should be extremely excited because they've got a pretty special player on the hand who I think can slot into their lineup straight away and be a first-line scoring threat, and he's shown that at this World Championships. He's actually the only player in the top 10 of scoring who doesn't play in the NHL.
Russia then 8-0 so far this championship, and they move into the semi-final where they will face a Finland team who are fresh from an extraordinary overtime win coming from behind against Sweden.
Back at the point, Mikkola, hard shot, scores! Mikkola! Rink wide to Elias Pettersson. He's got Lindholm driving. Pettersson in, hold, shoot, scores! What a move by Elias Pettersson! Antola, centering pass, left it in, shoots, Lundqvist kicks it away. Oh, what a stop, rebound, score! Antola, the captain, has tied the game with 1:29 to go! 3-on-1 now for the Finns. Manninen, along with Pessinen. In comes Manninen, walks in and shoots, scores! Sakari Manninen, overtime winner, and the Finns have knocked out the Swedes.
An incredible finish, comeback, and victory. Here is Finnish captain Marco Antila.
It wasn't easy game for us. Like, Sweden has a great team, but we believed till the end, and a nice call from Manninen at the overtime. We had no chance. That was the only chance to believe, and we did it. It doesn't always work, but it did today. Of course, it was amazing. Like, I can describe the feeling, but we are happy now, and the truth is that we haven't won anything yet, so we have to be better in Bratislava.
I'm delighted to say that joining us now on the line from Košice is Finnish hockey writer Tommy Vilberg. Hello, Tommy. How was that for you?
It's kind of hard to explain. As a professional, it shouldn't affect me at all. But I mean, that was a game with highs and lows, and the way it ended. It's usually the other way around. It's usually Sweden who beats Finland in the last minutes. But now, with all those NHL stars facing the big underdog Finland, I did not see that one coming.
Especially when they were 3-1 up and you managed to come back into the game, but with a minute to go, we saw something extraordinary earlier today from Canada with less than a second left on the clock, but this was still an extraordinary finale to regulation time.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funniest thing or the best thing about that game-tying goal was it was the team captain, Marko Anttila, the big fella, who has not scored yet in this tournament. And then he just steps up. He took the face off. He usually plays as a winger, but he took the face off since he's a right-handed player. So he and all the other centers, they're left. So that was some kind of tactical thing that coach Jukka Jalonen thought was a good idea. And, well, here we are, ready for the semifinals.
He's been using Antela in all sorts of ways, particularly his size during this tournament. But you mentioned this rivalry with the Swedes. It's a Nordic derby, but very, very different makeups of these two teams. The Swedish, pretty much an NHL side. The Finnish one, very much a homegrown roster.
Yeah, it was a classic David versus Goliath. It's always been like that. There are several classic games between these two in the late 80s. There were games where Sweden tied the game with two late goals in the last minute, actually. Actually, two of those games, I believe. And then, of course, the 1995 World Championship final when Finland took its first gold medal in Sweden by beating Sweden in the finals. And the list goes on. I mean, there is horrific loss for the Finns in Helsinki back in 2003 when the Finns led by 5-1 and then fell 5-6. And of course, the Bratislava final in 2011, Olympic final 2006. There's so many of them.
Well, congratulations on the win. As your prize, you get to take on Russia in the semi-final. You mentioned history with Sweden. Is there much history with Russia?
Yeah, it's the classic, the giant in the east and then the tiny little Finland. And there's definitely some great big emotions in that matchup also. But I mean, I would say the Finns versus the Swedes and the Finns versus the Russians, it does not get any bigger than that in Finland.
So how do you fancy your chances?
Not good, to be honest. I think the Russians, they have an amazing team, and they have been, they might be a little bit, they don't have the discipline. They have too many superstars, too many divas, and then they just mess it up. But this year they have actually been really, really effective. They have a great goalie in Andrei Vasilevsky, and they have actually been playing defense for once, and they're an absolute force. They are huge favorites.
Let's not worry about the Russians. That's for Saturday. For now, let's just enjoy this fantastic Finnish comeback from, what were you, 3-1 down. Is there any player in particular you'd like to give praise to, Tommy?
It has to be team captain Marko Anttila. Scoring, I just spoke to him. He said this was most definitely the biggest goal in his career. And the way his first time captain in the World Championships and to lead the underdogs all the way to the semifinals, that's tough thing to do, definitely. So he's the big leader.
Tommy, you're on your way to Bratislava.
Yep, tomorrow morning.
Excellent. All right, well, we look forward to seeing you here.
Yeah, definitely. That would be fun.
Tommy Vilberg, who was certainly happy enough with that result. Swedes less so. Their dreams of a three-peat lying in tatters. They're defending. Julie, is that the problem? All through the tournament, we've been seeing it from the start against the Czechs, those scares against Latvia and Switzerland, and now they've been made to pay.
Well, I think the real challenge here is they might have gotten a little too big for their britches, to use my favorite British term.
Oh, yeah?
But it's one of those things where throughout the tournament, they added players and added players and added players. And a lot of that is because they were going for a three-peat. And a lot of the players that they added have won championships either last year or the year before, if not both. So they kind of knew what they were capable of, but at the same time, it's hard to kind of develop team chemistry in that sense. And, you know, even though you have a terrific goalie in Henrik Lundqvist, you still have to put the pieces together in the team sense. And I just don't feel that happened for Sweden in quite the way that they wanted it to. Mm. And when things don't work the way that you expect them to, it causes a whole mess of doubt to happen, which just festers and creates other problems and doesn't allow you to really play at your full potential. So it's one of those things where it was kind of a little tiny snowball that just went rolling right on down that hill and they couldn't put it together. And you know, as everybody has said, this Finnish team is not the best at all on paper. But I also feel that the Finns do better when they don't have those superstars, because the Finnish MO for all of their teams is to team first. Mm-hmm. It's all about the team. It's not about the players. It's about what the individuals can do for the team. And that's the bottom line. So when you eliminate those stars, it allows everybody to step up because anybody on that roster can be the hero.
Has that been a conscious decision of the Finns this year to go with very much a homegrown team for that reason?
It really wasn't. It was simply the a lot of NHL players were in contract discussions for next year, so didn't want to risk an injury. And also players still in the playoffs. And then one or two players just flat out turned it down, citing they had injuries or needed rest. It was usually they have a good handful of NHL players, and this year was kind of a fluke for them in a way.
Delighted to see them go through to the semifinals. It's a shame to see the Swedes go because they've had so much talent. They've had some spectacular moments. Even in this game, the wonderful Nylander pass to Klimberg for the equaliser early on after the Finns had taken the lead. And that magic goal from Pedersen where he kind of chops back in and then fires one in top shelf. And also Gustafsson smashing the camera in the back of the goal.
That was a fantastic shot and kind of a real highlight reel moment.
Mm.
Except
it broke the camera, so we'll never see it, I guess.
But I think, yeah, them adding Klimberg and Landeskog to the team were enormous adds. And those players played excellently throughout the rest of the tournament. I mean, you saw today, I think some of the key team chemistry was upset because, quite frankly, the top two lines played great. But the bottom six just could not contain Finland. They were getting destroyed on the cycle down low, not being able to move the puck out. And there's been a lot of changes in that. I mean, there was an interview with Mario Kempe, who was scratched today the other day in Swedish media. And he said, look, you know, I'm Swedish through and through and I want Sweden to win and I'll happily refill water bottles if it means Sweden are going to win. And then you have Oscar Lindblom, who I don't think played a minute of the game today. And he scored 4 goals through the first 4 games of the tournament and found himself effectively sat on the bench the whole game. And the bottom six today really were overawed at times. And I think it might be due to a lack of some of the chemistry, guys only practicing once or twice together.
Do you want to offer Tommy and his fellow Finns some motive for optimism for their clash with Russia?
I mean, the Finns have a history of pulling off remarkable upsets, both inside and outside of hockey, and especially against Russia. So.
The chatter, of course, is when the last time Russia was defeated by Finland. And the last that I can recall was in 2016 in the semifinals. Finland went on to win gold. And in that tournament as well, they were led by teenagers, Patrick Laine and Sebastian Aho. So they've done it before in this way against a really stacked Russian team as well. So who's to say history can't repeat itself?
You're listening to The Totally Ice Hockey Show with James Richardson.
So that's one semi-final sorted, Russia taking on Finland. Meantime, the other semi-final decided by, well, one half of it, another crazy game in Košice. Canada taking on Switzerland. The Swiss who've been causing the Canadians problems for years and indeed beat them 3-2 last year in the semi-final of this competition. And they were 0.4 seconds away from doing it again this year.
Point is Diaz, swings it across to Andrighetto, a shot scores! Sven Andrighetto, power play goal, and the Swiss have taken a 1-0 lead. Picked up now by Dubois, Pierre-Luc Dubois, back for Faber, a long shot score, tipped by Stone, and the game is tied at 1. Marchini for Josi, swings it across, Haas, back across, Niederreiter, a drive, rebound, Hintzer scores! Seconds left. Stone feeds it back. Severson a drive. That's blocked by Moser. Severson shoots again. Scores! Right at 0. The puck crosses the line. Midway through the overtime. Dubois. Chip set by Niederreiter. He's got Stone with him. Dubois works in. Sends it. Stone scores! Mark Stone, the overtime winner. And Canada's off to the semifinals.
Wow. Let's hear from Stone and Severson.
It's never easy against the Swiss. As you see last year, I think Canada lost in the semis to them. They're a good team. They play well together. So it's never easy. So you always have to be prepared. And I think we were. I think we had maybe a little bit of letdown after an emotional game against the U.S. But I thought overall, 5-on-5, we were the better team. Sir penalty kill wasn't that sharp.
It was pretty crazy. I think, you're down by a goal late in the game, and they had us on the ropes the whole game. They played a great hockey game, and we just had to try to find a way to sneak one past their goalie. He was unbelievable, and it was just shoot, 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 and get some traffic in front of him. And luckily, time winding down, they were able to find one, so that was huge. We're just so confident. We're a confident group. We just knew that we weren't going to be going home after this game. So you got to give, like I said, a lot of credit to Switzerland. They gave us all they had, and we gave them all we had. So it was a heck of a game, and now we're on to Bratislava to keep on going with this thing.
Well, an emotional game. And among the millions watching agog back in Canada was the former Hockey Central at Noon host, Greg Brady. Now, of course, hosting on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Greg, thanks for joining us. What noise did you make when Damon Severson tied it up with nothing left on the clock?
Well, you let a little bit of breath out, so I'm not sure how much noise my breathing makes. You'd have to ask my wife about that, but it was a pretty high drama. Not sure it matched the Great Britain-France drama of last week, because it's not about relegation and staying up in the main group, but it would have been quite an upset as far as Swiss hockey has come. For them to lead most of the match and for them to be in great shape, and a couple missed empty nets as well. They had a great opportunity really to put Canada away with a great goaltending performance. And I don't doubt that's a real bitter pill that's going to sit with those Swiss players all summer.
Second year in a row that they've been on the wrong end of an unbelievably tight outcome, losing, of course, in the final last time around. Who stood out for you? You mentioned Giannone, the Swiss keeper, had a great game. But for Canada, who particularly stood out for you?
To be honest, I look at a few players that they're quite fortunate. As most people know, Canada gets their players, and the majority of countries do get their players, but especially Canada, the States, to some extent Sweden, get their best players from teams eliminated from the playoffs. So what a real benefit that Pierre-Luc Dubois of the Columbus Blue Jackets was available. I thought he was fantastic in tonight's match. Two assists and not a ton of ice time either, just the 17:04 of ice time for him. So there were a number of forwards that played a lot more out there. Anthony Cirelli sure did. Sean Couturier of the Philadelphia Flyers on the top line. But I thought Dubois was excellent. And obviously, people will talk about Mark Stone and the tip goal on the tying shot with 0.4 seconds to go. But he really did have an empty net to put it into on a beautiful pass from the younger player, Pierre-Luc Dubois. So I thought he was Canada's man of the match, if you will. But obviously for Switzerland, they're not in it without a 42-24, I think, were the shots. A phenomenal goalkeeping performance. And for a 31-year-old keeper, I do wonder to never have really gotten a sniff of attention. Wasn't drafted over here for the NHL. Didn't come over, play junior. Wasn't looked at by American colleges. Not that that's going to change things, but the few people I've talked to, a lot of people took notice of what a great performance that was.
Canada had looked heavy favorites when you looked on the form in this championship, but the Swiss, of course, you've problem so many times in the past. As you're watching that game and Canada behind for pretty much the whole game, were you just thinking, here we go again?
Yeah, to some extent. And Switzerland has had a history of big wins over Canada. They obviously had a big win at the Torino Olympics in 2006, and people were thinking of Switzerland, really. And I still think the biases that they do is they're not on the same playing field as Russia, Sweden, Finland, the Czech Republic, and to some extent Slovakia, although some of the best Slovakian players are getting older. We're starting to get more and more NHLers, high draft picks as well. Look at Nico Hischier playing today, the 19-year-old who the New Jersey Devils picked first overall a couple of years ago, ahead of a lot of Canadian and American players they could have chosen. So Switzerland, that 06 win in Torino at the Olympics really put them on the main stage. And we forget sometimes in our judgment that, you know, they've only really been on that main stage for just over a decade now. So it takes time. It certainly took time for the Scandinavian countries. So they're really, really impressive in how they play together. And we used to make the excuses when we lose, I think, in Canada and maybe to some extent the United States. Well, those players play together a good chunk of the season. And at that point in 2006, maybe they did, but there are so many more NHLers now on a team like Switzerland. Look at Nino Niederreiter coming over quite quickly after the Carolina Hurricanes were eliminated in the last round of the Boston Bruins. I mentioned from the Devils. There's several players. Rito Berra, obviously the backup keeper today, was well known in Calgary and Minnesota for playing in the NHL. So there's more NHL players than ever. So you can't really use the excuse that they have, you know, a ton more time to gel and develop chemistry, whereas Canada and the U.S. and even Russia are kind of slapped together with a couple weeks in April to practice and get ready for this tournament. That's not an excuse anymore when Switzerland plays Canada really tough.
The funny thing was Canada looked like they were really hitting form in their previous game when you slapped the USA around 3-0. In this game, though, the scoreline could have been bigger. You mentioned Giannone's keeping, but equally, Niederreiter could have opened the scoring early on. There was another moment when Matt Murray nearly kicked the puck back into his own net. What are the big lessons then for Canada after you get away with this one a little bit going into the semifinal?
Well, I think these players are so used to, that's a great question. These players are so used to, you know, the best of seven series when it matters the most. They play that 82 game season. The series take 2 weeks. So sometimes you've got even 2 days off, depending on arena availability with concerts and maybe even, you know, the NBA. So there's big gaps in time between the series. You've got time to recover. But in a knockout stage, I think these players really aren't as used to it. And so they play these round-robin games. They know they're going to get through. They know they're going to be in a decent seeding. Canada did well, as you mentioned, end up at the top of their group. But at the same time, you look and say, they're used to being able to build momentum back in a series and really wear down another opponent. I think we agree that if Canada and the Swiss played 10 matches, Canada's probably winning six of them, maybe drawing one other and maybe losing a couple or three. But they're not getting beat in a seven-game series by Switzerland. But it's a great cautionary tale, as you note, that in a knockout game, it's just that one game is very much an up-for-grabs scenario. And I think I really do think North American players don't grow up with that mentality.
Well, hopefully this has been a wake-up call from a Canadian point of view. The good news for the semis is that Anthony Mantha is back.
Well, that's huge. And I was going to mention, yeah, they did well without him today, although, you know, to score just the one goal basically for the first 59 minutes and 59 seconds wasn't terribly impressive, despite the 42 shots. There's little you can do when you run into a hot goalkeeper. The Swiss didn't give a ton of power plays away either to Canada in this match. But yeah, Mantha's been really, really vital for them, and probably not even playing with players as talented with sort of a depleted Detroit Red Wings team the last few years as he gets to play with now. And sometimes good players just really elevate them. We see that in international soccer all the time. Players leave a club that's really not fantastic, get surrounded by good players, and they don't shrink a little bit. If anything, they grow in terms of their confidence and ability. I'll be thrilled to get Mantha back for the semifinal.
Wow, Alex and Julie, Canada kind of dodged a bullet there.
They really did. I mean, their penalty killing today was not what you'd expect from Canada, especially when you look at the roster. I mean, the star of today was obviously Mark Stone, one of the best defensive forwards in the NHL. And you also have Sean Couturier, who's one of the premier penalty killers in the NHL. But on the penalty to kill today, they just could not contain the Swiss. The first goal, Andrew Guetta fired from the left point. Beautiful shot that went in. And the second goal, the Swiss just kind of ran rings around them, and it resulted in Nico Hischier scoring pretty much into an empty net.
The funny thing was, Julie, I was saying to you right before they scored the first time that the Swiss never score from a power play.
Well, it's one of those things where you look at the way the Swiss are effective, and they do it through their skating. They have this kind of swarming mentality where they just never stop and never stand still, and you have to keep your head on a swivel. So if you can do that and do it effectively and keep the puck away from your opponent, you have a good chance of putting it on net and it going in, especially when you look at the Swiss goaltenders. Throughout all the levels of international hockey, you can never count out the Swiss for two reasons. One, they always have a goalie that has a great game. And two, they are incredibly offensive. So all they need is one guy to get hot in one game, and it can happen in a quarterfinal, a semifinal, whatever the case may be. But the Swiss are always dangerous.
Who got hot in this one?
Nico Hischier, in my opinion. This was his first opportunity with the men's national team. He's been with the World Junior team and the U18 team as well. So this was his first time at this level, and I think it took him a little bit to get going. Even though he's already played 2 years in the NHL, it's a different beast here. So it took him a while to get going, but then as the tournament wore on, he got more and more confident, more and more comfortable in his role with the team, playing with the guys he was playing with. He has just taken steps and steps and steps, and, you know, if I'm a New Jersey Devil fan, I'm excited about what he can continue to do as he progresses in his career and how this opportunity could help him do that.
It's tough on the Swiss. As Greg was mentioning there, they led for almost 20 minutes of the third period and came away with nothing.
This tournament and last year's tournament, you've got to start thinking. Everyone always talks about the big six in hockey, but I think the Swiss are starting to put themselves in contention as the seventh team. This year they had 13 players playing in the NHL, and in this tournament they were missing their top scorer in the NHL, in Timo Meier, who was with the San Jose Sharks, a really young player with a fantastic future ahead of him. And they're really starting to establish themselves as a world power and capable of beating anyone. Started with the silver medal in 2013, and since then they've just built and built and built. And there are new NHLers coming from Switzerland every year. I mean, we've just had rumours of Gaetan Haas, who played at the World Championships, signing with the NHL. They've not released the team yet, but his agent said he's seemingly going there next year. And this year in the draft as well, they have Valentin Nussbaumer, who will probably go in the third round approximately. And you also have a player who played at this World Championship who's only 19 years old, in Filip Kurashev, who's a Chicago Blackhawks prospect, and a lot of people think he might be able to make the Blackhawks next year.
Ooh, where he might be a teammate with Dominik Kubalik, no?
Dominik Kubalik, also a fantastic player, a 23-year-old who's been tearing up Europe in the NLA, the Swiss League, for a few years now. There was some very strange contractual issues in regards to he was drafted by the LA Kings. People thought his rights had expired, but they hadn't expired because he defected to the Swiss League from the NHL. His rights were traded to Chicago because he didn't want to play in Los Angeles. And I mean, if he comes to the NHL for Chicago, I think he's immediately going to slot into their top six and play a big role, potentially alongside Kurashev.
Well, he certainly played a big role this evening, Alex, when the Czechs featured in the other quarterfinal. Facing Germany, they took a while to get going, but they ended up resounding 5-1 winners.
Kovac will skate it. It scores! Simone on for Voracek. 3-on-1. Voracek fires, save, rebound, score! Kubalik, he can rip it. Scores! Horovchik at the empty net. He'll dish it off, and Kovac will find the empty net with 9.5. Then the Czech Republic will advance to the semifinals against Canada.
From the start, we just tried to be patient, you know, because we knew it before it's going to be tough. They're going to play next to each other, pretty close, you know, compact in the neutral zone. So we just try to play outside, you know, for a long pass and get it deep and be there first. So that was our game plan, and I think it was working pretty well, actually.
Dominik Kubalik there. So, Alex and Julie, those Czechs, huh? Voracek again. He's such an exciting player.
He's a beast. It's one of those things where when he gets going, you look out because anything is possible with what he can do. And I feel that he is one of the more effective players when he is most determined to be an effective player. And I feel that that's what we got today, where he just kind of put his foot down and said, this is it. I'm doing this. We're going to win this game and we're going to play for a medal.
Okay. He's equally effective, whether on the ice or leading the free folk. He can just basically take care of everything. What did he do in this game, apart from notching up, I think, his 16th point of this world championship?
I think he was just effective in all areas of the game. He really thrives off of a physical game. So if he can get involved and engaged in the game in that way, he is just attuned to everything that's going on. It's like his spidey senses go up and he just sees everything that much more.
He's a real leader as well. Now,
his
presence, I think, it puts the wind up the opposition and it drives his teammates on.
It's one of those things where for people who know him and know what he's like in the locker room, it's no surprise that he was captain of this team. But for people who don't know him and just kind of see like what they watch on TV, you question it because you don't always see the passion on the ice as you do on the bench. And
I think with the Czech team, maybe you do. Would that be fair?
You definitely do. But that's because it's so emotional for him. Like he wants this. The fans are here. He's feeding off of their energy. And that is why I'm saying like he is determined. He wants to not only win this for himself, he wants to win it for his teammates, but this place is packed with Czech fans and he wants to send them home happy.
When he plays like he does today as well, it really echoes his hero of ice hockey, Jaromír Jágr, who he played 1 year with the Philadelphia Flyers. They're from the same hometown of Kladno. They're a similar size, a similar style. I mean, obviously Voracek is not Jaromír Jágr, but when he plays like he has so far this tournament, with the amazing skating, the work down low, dragging defensemen on the back and just really being a talisman for his team, it really brings back memories of one of the greatest hockey players of all time.
And Germany, was this as one-sided as the 5-1 scoreline suggests?
Definitely not. This is a team that is even throughout their lineup, and they can come at you, but they don't come at you as strong of waves. They just have this consistent attack. The challenge for them was really just getting through the defense that the Czechs were putting forward. They were smothering every opportunity, not really allowing many shots to reach the net. Added to that, they just don't have as much firepower as the other teams. They have a lot of effort, a lot of grit, a lot of heart, and I feel that that's why you saw such a close game for so long.
Right.
You know, the Czechs didn't really open that game up until, I would say, even the third period.
Right. Well, it was 1-1 at the end of the second. Although the German equalizer came from a fairly bizarre moment involving Bartosak, the Czech keeper.
I mean, he ended up as player of the game, but if someone would have told me he was player of the game after that moment, I would have been surprised. The puck goes behind the net. He has all the time in the world to just play it back the opposite way. And instead, he flings it forward. It goes right to Tiefels. He slots it in front for Maurer, who finishes an easy goal, simply because Bartosek had such problems getting back set in his goal. He was way too far out of the crease. He wasn't ready for the shot. It was a very strange moment.
But sorry, Judy, you were saying the Germans weren't outplayed to the extent of 5-1.
It's definitely not. The score is not necessarily indicative of the effort that the Germans put forward. Again, with them, the confidence is so tattered, we'll say, that as soon as it was 3-1, the game might as well have been over at that point. It's unfortunate because Germany did play so well in this tournament. But I will say this, if you look at the roster, there are 6 players who are born in 95, and they are considered the new core of this German team. And so they're 23, 24, Leon Draisaitl's one of them, and they've grown up playing together. Like literally, like in some cases, literally they've grown up since they were like 5 playing together. So this core is going to get better and better and better, and they're going to add more and more players like Moritz Seider, who's draft eligible this year, projected to go in the top 20, maybe even higher based on his performance here. So there's a lot to be excited about in terms of what Germany can do in the next 2, 3, 5 to 10 years.
Well, we would talking yesterday, actually, to Franz Reindl, who's been behind a lot of their recent developments, where they're kind of rescuing the old Bundesliga and turning it into the DEL, which has had a huge impact. But then going to the government and telling them, you need to build ice rinks. He asked them for 50. I don't know how many. but basically, he's gone there with a shopping list. And one of the things he's got the clubs to do is say, we will commit to reducing progressively from now to 2026 the number of foreign players in our roster so that we do bring through young players, and it seems to be working.
When you have an enormous number of players but nowhere for them to play, how can they get better? In similar ways, keeping players here, you know, a lot of their best players go and live in the United States or Canada and some stay there. But what they really want is them to come back and teach the young German kids at whatever level and kind of share that knowledge and do that. And it's Denmark is very similar, that they only have 25 rinks in the entire country.
Really?
Yes. So it, like, rinks for these smaller countries are incredibly important. And the request from Franz was, we need these rinks. We need the municipalities, the local governments to build them. And what they want is to have community rinks for every club team that they have in order to support these fans that are growing up with the game, these kids that are excited about hockey. They want to make it easy for them to get into the game and to play.
Well, that's good. In the immediate future, though, Germany not taking part in the semifinals, the Czech Republic are, and they'll be taking on the Canadians. Quick thoughts on that before we shut up shop for today?
I think the favourites probably have to be Canada, especially with how they've grown into the tournament. At the start of the tournament, Canada did look a bit cagey. Mm-hmm. They didn't look quite themselves, but they've really got the physical game going. Really, the game starts with the defense as well, of team defense. They have a great group of forwards who all play good defense. Back check hard, get the puck deep, and then cycle the puck along the boards. And physically, I'm not sure any other team in the tournament can compete with them once they get the cycle going.
Okay. I don't know how many rinks they've got in the Czech Republic, Julie, but do they have a chance against Canada?
They definitely have a chance against Canada. The interesting part is the Canadians are the cardiac kids. So no matter what the score, you cannot count them out. They've already scored 2 last second, literally last second goals to win games.
Of course, yeah.
And so when you have those kind of clutch players, of which Mark Stone is definitely one of them, which is why he makes all that money, you can never count them out. But I will say this, these Czech players are thriving off of these fans. The fact that they are here, the fact that they are so supportive, they are riding that wave. And that, to me, is the number one reason why the Czechs have a chance, because they've got the skill, they've got good goaltending, they've got the ability to defend. This is a really good, high-quality Czech team. They can definitely contend with Canada. And then you throw in that crowd behind them that just pushes them on, you never know. That's why we play the games.
Well, very, very interesting. And we'll see what happens in those games on Saturday. And rest assured, listener, that we'll be back straight after the buzzer sounds to review all of the action in the semi-finals. Thank you so much to Julie and Alex for being with us today.
You're quite welcome.
It's a pleasure, James.
It's ours. Listener, thank you for being with us too. Don't forget to rate and review us and share and subscribe and all that sort of thing. And get hold of that IIHF app. Even if it doesn't allow you to go back through time to other competitions, it's still really great. That's it for today then. We'll see you Saturday.
The Totally Ice Hockey Show is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with In Front.